Our next case this morning is number 042048, Lowly against the Attorney General. Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Justin Burton, and I'm here on behalf of the Lowly family in their petition for review of the Board of Immigration Appeals decision. In particular, the Board of Immigration Appeals dismissed the appeal before it and sustained the IJ's decision on two grounds. One, that it lacked credibility, and two, that the nexus was not established for the underlying persecution and one of the five enumerated grounds under the Immigration Act. First, starting off with the lack of credibility or the adverse credibility finding, the immigration judge in particular found four reasons for finding that the petitioner lacked credibility. The two of the reasons were due to the documents that were submitted to the court. One was the lack of diacritic markings on a summons to appear in court after he had already left Albania. The second was a Democratic Party card without fees stamped to it. Third reason was that the testimony was vague and confusing. And the fourth was that he maintained his government job even after the socialists came to party, to power. Excuse me. The first two reasons, they proffered a witness from the forensics document laboratory who testified that these documents were fabricated. However, he used a very bizarre definition of what fabricated means, where he said the documents aren't necessarily counterfeit, but the use of the document and the authenticity or authority of the issuance was in severe question. The forensics document lab witness testified that he's certain that these were fabricated, although the definition of fabricated has some question whether they are in fact authentic or not, and they may very well have been authentic documents. It didn't get to the point where there was an exact finding by their witness. Instead, the IJ eventually leaped to the conclusion that these are certainly fabricated documents, that they may or may not have been counterfeited, and then held it against the petitioners in this case.
Mr. Burton, how do you think our recent opinion of Heise versus Gonzalez affects your argument about the document forgeries?
I think we also have to look, as well as Heise, at Korski, where did he knowingly present documents or may or may not have been fabricated. In Korski, for instance, it was a Russian Jewish male who had obtained a passport or a birth certificate from overseas, which indicated he was Jewish. He did not know whether this passport was fraudulent or not. He submitted it to the court because his relatives had obtained it for him from overseas. In this case, very much the same way, he had no knowledge that these may or may not have been fabricated. I mean, we still don't know whether these were counterfeit. However, we leap to the conclusion that they were and then hold it against him on the credibility finding. It reasons where if the petitioner knowingly puts forward documentation which is counterfeit, then he loses credibility or there may be an adverse credibility finding before the court, but he didn't knowingly do this. It's unclear whether these documents were real or not, and to rely solely on a questionable document to determine adverse credibility, it just wouldn't support. It wouldn't support by cogent reasons that the petitioner lacks credibility. The third basis, and I think probably the surest footing for the court to probably find the credibility, doesn't necessarily go to the nexus in finding that the petitioner contradicted himself. It just said the testimony was vague. A vague testimony doesn't necessarily lend itself to a ruling that the petitioner lacked credibility. All it indicates is maybe the testimony was vague, but beyond that, we can't determine or decipher what really happened here.
How do we deal with the fact that Mr. Lowly stayed in the country for years after the worst incidents of the alleged persecution. In other words, if he truly fears the government, why does he wait 4 years after the abduction and the beating of his son to leave?
The record indicates that while the socialists then came into power in 1997, he was certainly trying to get degrees. He had this government job, and there were certain factors for him to remain in Albania. One was that the government really didn't take an active interest into him until well into 1998 or 1999, where they again presumed their activities. The expert witness in this case testified that the socialist government in particular, had different problems to deal with. One is corruption, the shaky economy, the fall of the pyramid schemes in the economy. I think those were the main focus of the Socialist Party. Granted, he didn't leave during the time when the Democrats were in power, hoping that maybe something will change. He had a good, prominent position. He was working towards PhD. Maybe it wasn't until the end for him to realize the socialists are now in power, there's nothing I can do, it's time for me to get out. It's mere speculation, and I don't think the speculation can establish a basis for his lack of credibility finding. I think above all, and the most telling about this case in that it wasn't properly analyzed, is that the expert witness's testimony never made it into the IJ's decision and never made it into the board decision. This expert witness is probably one of the elite expert witnesses on Albania, not just in the United States, but in the world. He came into the immigration court. He testified to his belief that the acts of Dr. Loli were political acts in and of itself, even though he may have not advertently advocated for the Democratic Party. His acts of culling through the documents and bringing to light certain activities, including executions by the Communist Party, back during their regime, is a politicized act in and of itself. And this wasn't even looked at by the Immigration Court nor the Board of Immigration Appeals. And at this time, I'd like to reserve my rebuttal unless there are any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. We'll hear now from Mr. Goldman.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Dan Goldman on behalf of the Attorney General. This Court should uphold the agency decision and deny the petition for review. Asylum is for individuals who have been persecuted on account of a protected ground. The petitioners in this case, particularly Dr. Loli, were not persecuted. Dr. Loli worked for the archives in Albania for 28 years.
Is it not persecution to beat his son into senselessness?
Simply to be beaten is not persecution, Your Honor, because it has to be done on account of a protected ground.
Well.
And one of the problems in this case is that protected ground, that on account of element, is not established. And that's one of the many problems in this case for the petitioners. As the immigration judge noted, Dr. Loli was not persecuted. In fact, in the immigration judge's words, he thrived. He worked for 28 years for the archives. He rose up through the ranks of the archives. He was never fired. He worked for the archives until he came to the United States. He worked for the archives through different political parties being in power, including his own, including the Democratic Party. He got his PhD. He taught, starting actually the same year that the socialists came to power. So that's not the resume of someone who was persecuted on account of a protected ground. In addition, he never filed a police report. This is someone who, by the very nature of his profession, believes in documenting things. And yet, he never documented the fact of these alleged attacks. In fact, in one situation, he asserts that he woke up at a police station and still didn't file a police report.
When you're arrested by the police on suspicion of helping to organize riots that accompany, you know, the funeral of someone who was slain and held and pressed, what kind of reports do you make to the police? I mean, these are not... I was going to say our police, but never mind. Go ahead.
Your Honor, I think Your point would be a much stronger one, with all due respect, if that had been the case with only one of the incidents. But when for example, with regard to the incident you referred to earlier with his son, that took place when his own party, the Democratic Party, was in power. It was Dr. Lowley's testimony, it was Dr. Fisher's testimony, that the police were highly politicized. Well, if they're highly politicized, then presumably he could file a police report when the Democrats are in power.
Well, of course, he's noting the persistence of discrimination against, ethnic Greeks. Which brings me to a question that I had, because the IJ's conclusions about the State Department report on Albania seems to be incorrect. The report notes the persistence of that sort of discrimination against ethnic and religious minorities in Albania, and it specifically mentions ethnic Greeks as one of the disfavored groups. What do we do with that? That's an obvious error by the IJ, is it not?
The asylum profile states, and this is, I'm quoting from the immigration judge's decision, members of the Greek minority have residency rights in neighboring Greece, making a U.S. asylum claim on that basis rarely credible, and also notes that from the asylum profile that although there have been personal incidents or differences, they're not coming from the government. And that's where the claim on behalf of the ethnic background, the Greek ethnicity, would fail. That's where that has problems, Your Honor. Again, this is a case of someone who worked for the Albanian archives for 28 years, rose up through those ranks, was never fired, worked there until the day he left. He had every opportunity to leave. Before that, he'd been to Greece on several occasions, traveled at other times.
Didn't he have a very fine job and then lost it and had to work his way up from the bottom once again?
That was a little earlier in his tenure, but he was never fired. And the idea, Your Honor, that what the petitioner is saying is that he was in a position to cause problems for former communists. If that were true, the government had the opportunity to, for lack of a better term, to silence him. The government didn't do that. And not only didn't they silence him by kicking him out of his job, he was allowed to get a PhD. He was allowed not only to get a PhD, to learn and to study and to obtain that degree, he was allowed to impart his views to others as an adjunct faculty member. It's internally inconsistent to say that I was such an enemy of the government that they wanted to silence me, and yet they had every opportunity to do that and didn't silence me.
I know that the IJ was not at all impressed with this summons and did not consider it, but I'm going to ask you for a moment to assume, arguendo, that it was admitted and it ought to be considered. How does that change the picture? It sounds like this fellow's going back to something less than a picnic.
You're saying assume that it was legitimate, Your
That's
Honor?
Correct. Arguendo.
I think it's hard to do that given what that forensics report was. Again, it certainly helps his case, Your Honor, but I don't think it comes back to what the burden is in this court for the petitioners. The Lowleys come into this court with an extremely high burden. They can't come in here and simply say there's another possible outcome. That's not enough, and it's beside the point. And that's not my words; it's the Supreme Court in the Elias Zacharias case saying it is beside the point that there's another possible outcome. Assuming your hypothetical, Your Honor, that document in and of itself was legitimate, certainly that helps their case. Does it compel reversal of the decision? That's the question. That's their burden before this court. And the government's position is that it does not, particularly when there are all these other problems with the petitioner's case. I keep coming back to the facts here. 28 years, Your Honor, working for the Albanian archives, rising up through the ranks, despite the change in political parties.
Forgive me. What about the corroboration of his party membership by his submission of the two certificates from that branch of the DP? That would undercut the fraudulent document finding, wouldn't it? Because, I mean, a DP member wouldn't need to submit a false DP membership card.
It's one possibility, Your Honor, but I think you mentioned the HICE case earlier. What this court said in the HICE case, and then obviously I understand you're familiar with it, Your Honor.
I've been familiar with every case today.
Didn't the board merely supplement the prior decision?
I think that's one way to look at it, Your Honor. But to respond to Judge Rovner's question, with regard to these documents, the question, and it sort of ties all the questions together, this is not a case where the claim was so implausible from the get-go that there's no other possible alternative. This is a case where the petitioners bring forward a claim. But the questions that this court is asking and the argument the petitioner is making is there was another possible outcome. And with all due respect to this court, to the petitioners, that's not the burden that the petitioners bear in this court. The petitioners have to show that the evidence compels, demands reversal. With regard to the documents, Your Honor asked about that, and I was going to talk about the HICE case. What the HICE case said was even if someone might have an otherwise might have a legitimate claim, when an individual submits documents that are determined to be fraudulent, that is a valid basis for an immigration judge to make a negative inference about that claim. In the HICE case, it was newspaper articles that had been supposedly doctored. And the immigration judge in that case said, these documents have been doctored, they're fraudulent, I'm going to hold that against the petitioner.
Yeah, but in HICE, the petitioner banked his entire claim of persecution on the publication of these articles criticizing the government, and he forged the author attribution to the articles, so his entire claim collapsed. That's not the case here.
I think it's a question of degree, Your Honor. Certainly in the HICE case, he did rely to a greater extent on those articles as the basis for his claim. But in this case, he doesn't disavow himself of those articles, of the summons, of the Democratic Party card that was determined to be fabricated, which he could have done. He could have walked into immigration court knowing what the forensics lab said and said, you know what, I asked for these people to send me documents that might help me. If they sent me fraudulent documents, I apologize. I withdraw them. I don't want any part of them. I'm going to disconnect my claim from these documents. But when he ties his claim to them, I think then we get into the realm of the ultimate holding in the HICE case. And I see my time's expired. If I could conclude briefly, Your Honor. We get into the realm of what the court said in HICE, that those altered documents, those fraudulent documents, are a legitimate basis for an adverse inference. And that goes to what the petitioner's burden is in this court, and that's to show that the evidence compels reversal. It does not. And, Your Honor, if I could ask for just one moment briefly to respond to something that was said earlier, the question is raised about Dr. Fisher's testimony. Dr. Fisher's testimony was mentioned by the immigration judge. It was not discussed in detail. I'm not going to stand up here and say it was, but it was mentioned. It was acknowledged. It was one part of the evidence that petitioners brought forward to support their case. Why wasn't it mentioned by the board? One particular reason that it was not mentioned by the board and that there was no obligation to mention it is that there was no specific argument made to the board about Dr. Fisher's testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. How much time does Mr. Burton have? Mr. Burton, you have 3 minutes remaining, but I'm going to give you a fourth.
Thank you, Your Honor. Respondent's counsel indicates that there may have been an alternative outcome in this case. However, he neglects to indicate that the record considered as a whole wasn't properly considered. I mean, we're the one being the expert witness's testimony, the other whether in fact these fabricated documents are counterfeit. I also find it interesting that the forensics, the FDL laboratory, can only determine whether alterations have been made to certain documents and whether they're counterfeit by typeface or otherwise. They can't do that to determine, they can't determine whether where these documents came from. They can't simply go back to the court of issuance and make the determination that these were not issued by the court. We don't know that. All we know is they weren't altered. They're not counterfeit by any of the type print on top of the documents. In fact, the State Department does run investigations to determine whether the summons or the Democratic Party card was actually issued by an authorizing agency. They never did that in this case. So all we're left with is this definition by the FDO lab, the neglect from the IJ and the board of not taking into consideration the expert witness, the Dr. Fisher's testimony, and also the fact that they didn't take into consideration the country reports and talking about the Greek ethnicity and also Dr. Fisher's testimony about Greek ethnicity as well. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Our thanks both to Mr. Burton and to Mr. Goldman, and the case will be taken under advisement.